Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Others may divide the whole planetary system into three divisions, namely the lower planetary systems on the legs up to the earth, the middle planetary systems on the navel, and the upper planetary system, Svarloka, from the chest to the head of the Supreme Personality. Purport. The three divisions of the complete planetary systems are here mentioned. 14 are imagined by others, and that is also explained. That's the purport. Hare Krishna. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the second canto, fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Cause of All Causes. Om Jnana Tamirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna, so it's good to be here today on this wonderful sunny day. I haven't been to the Manda Morning program for a while. I usually do my own program at home. I have to admit, I listen to class online about 50% of the time. The other 50% of the time, I'm doing my own thing. But it's good to be here. New Vyasasan, I can tell you, it's comfortable but not comfortable at the same time to be assembled in front of so many Vaishnavas, trying to speak Siddhanta, especially all the senior Vaishnavas. We have Murli Manohar Prabhu today here. Thank you very much, Prabhu, for coming. And we have Paramananda Prabhu, Paramakaruna Prabhu, Bhagadatta Prabhu. We have so many senior devotees. I don't know what I'm doing here. We have Jagat Priya Mataji and so many other Matajis and Prabhus. I don't know their names, but also online we have Jayadeva Prabhu. I know he always listens. And Sachi Mata. So I'd like to seek everybody's blessing so I can say something useful for today's class. Okay. Now it's a very interesting purport, the whole chapter, where Narada Muni is asking questions to Brahma about the creation of the universe. And Brahma is explaining him and everything. He's explaining all the different planetary systems, and we have been learning about those planetary systems for a while, I suppose. And I'm sure Radha Mohan Prabhu yesterday gave a very good description of the planetary systems. He loves planetary systems. When he speaks, sometimes it feels like he's been traveling everywhere himself and seeing everything. So I'm sure you know enough about the planetary systems. And you might think, why in the middle of the Bhagavatam, which is the most important book that is meant to give us the highest and the topmost philosophy, why are we talking about planetary systems? I think Taruna Prabhu would disagree. He loves planetary systems as well. I'm not going to tell you about what he's doing, but he's doing something pretty amazing, which you will find out in a few months on the planetary systems. But planetary systems it's good to know. It's good to know about planetary systems. And you would think, why they're there? Okay, why they're there if we're going to speak about the highest philosophy? Because the Bhagavatam takes you step by step. Okay, it takes you step by step to the highest philosophy. And it's a very important book, and everything that is in the Bhagavatam is very, very important. Before Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he went to Shantipur. So he was visiting Shantipur, and he was at a temple there. Shantipur is a place of Advaita Acharya. If you go there today, you can see the place where he lived and all of that. In fact, there are a lot of Gaudiya Vaishnava devotees in Shantipur. They're just not in, you know, they're in the line from Advaita Acharya, and there's loads of them. And in fact, if you put the number of people, Gaudiya Vaishnavas together, the line of the number of devotees that fit in the Advaita Sampradaya of Gaudiya Vaishnavas are a lot more than we have in ISKCON all over the world. But they're all in Bengal. And it's a very big line. So if you go to Shantipur, you can meet them and say hello, if you know Bengali. So Prabhupada was in Shantipur. And devotees, one place where he used to go and regularly visit at a temple, the pujari knew him. And he used to go there all the time. So the pujari asked him that, "I heard that you're going to the West. I heard you're traveling to the West to preach." And Prabhupada said, "No." He said, "The Bhagavatam is going to the West to preach. I am only going there as the servant of the Bhagavatam." So Prabhupada brought the Bhagavatam to the West. Prabhupada followed the Bhagavatam as a servant. And that is the idea. Krishna works through his devotees, but essentially it's Krishna, and the Bhagavatam is another form of Krishna. So everything that's there is very, very important. But the Bhagavatam takes you step by step. Okay, and sometimes people think, "I want to learn about the highest philosophy," okay, because the Bhagavatam talks about the highest philosophy. But you can't just go straight to the highest philosophy. You have to take it one step at a time. If I tell you that, okay, here is a, if I take you to a new town, okay, where, I don't know, somewhere, Lisbon in Portugal, where you can have a holiday, and I take you to a 20-story building and say, "There you go, there are the keys to your flat. Okay, there, it's the penthouse suite on the 20th floor." And then you want to go there, but there are no stairs and there's no lift. So how do you get up there? You're not going to jump all the way up there, are you? Unless you're Superman, or you're in a Bollywood movie, in which sometimes without any explanation, the hero just runs and jumps on top of a 20th-story building. So unless it's one of those, you need to take the stairs. You need to go step by step. You might think, "Who's this crazy guy who's built a flat with no stairs? How am I going to get up there?" So the Bhagavatam is not a crazy book. It's a very systematic book. And step by step, as we go through the different cantos, we can learn about the highest philosophy. But just because the Bhagavatam contains the highest philosophy, it doesn't mean you don't need to know everything else, okay? And it doesn't mean you are the highest just because you're reading the Bhagavatam, okay? We need to take it step by step to understand the supreme, topmost philosophy of Krishna. We need to first understand his greatness, to understand the rasa, the sweetness. Before we get to that stage, we need to understand the greatness. And hence, in these chapters, Brahma is explaining to Narada how great the Lord is. Now, whether the Virat Rupa is metaphorical or not, which has been discussed in the past, because I was here listening, whether it's metaphorical, whether it's real, regardless of that debate, one thing is for sure, that the Lord is amazing and he's created such amazing things. So let's appreciate that. Okay, we can get some appreciation of Krishna based on the amount of creation that is made. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, and when I read this in the early days, because I was excited about reading, so I read this a bit too early, and I was wondering, how can all these planetary systems be in the belly of the Lord? It doesn't make any sense. Like, is the Lord that big? I mean, what is the blue sky we're seeing? Maybe we're like a little ant. And you know, when an ant sees a human being which is massive, it just sees everything brown. Is it that we're seeing Krishna, and that is the skin of Krishna that is blue, which is the sky? How can all these planets fit into his feet? Okay, and what if he walks? Then are all the planets walking with him? And this is totally absurd. And that's what I was thinking. But I'll tell you something even more absurd. Okay? There were gases in the world, and then there was a lightning strike, and then it created amino acids. And then from that came proteins, and then from that came trilobites, and then fishes, amphibians, reptiles, gorillas, monkeys, and humans. How's that for absurd? So there's so many things we may think and we may not understand, but if you follow the right process, in time you will. As you see in this chapter, when Narada has questions on how shall we find out more, he goes and asks Brahma. Okay, he doesn't bring out his telescope and say, let's do some research. Okay, he doesn't start collecting soil samples and start digging the ground looking for bones to find out how everything was created. He goes and asks Brahma, Brahmaji, who is his father. And if you want to know something, there's three ways you can find out. Okay? Now let's take an example. Say you walk out of the reception and say the road's wet. Okay, and you look outside and you're trying to figure out how the road's wet. And you see Janakula Prabhu there, okay, with a hose pipe watering the gardens. Okay? And he's watering and you can see that some of the water's going on the road and that's why the road's wet. So you've seen it directly with sense perception. So that's pratyaksha. Okay, you're seeing it face to face. Now maybe you come at a time when he's already done that and you go out there and the road's wet and Janakula Prabhu isn't around. Okay? But you see the road is wet, you see the bushes are wet, you look up in the sky, there are no black clouds. So you assume that maybe somebody's been watering the gardens because the bushes are wet, there's no clouds, there's no other way the water could have got here. Okay? That's called the science of deduction. You know, like Sherlock Holmes, science of deduction. It's called Anuman in Sanskrit. It's a reasonable assumption, but you could be wrong. You could be wrong, especially if you're in India. Okay, if you see an elephant nearby, it could mean something else. The water could have got there not from a hose pipe, but from an elephant. So you can still get it wrong. And then there is Shabda. Okay, so you go outside, the road's wet, and then you don't know what to do. But there's a man standing there, so you ask him, do you know how the road got wet? He said, oh yeah, there was a gardener watering. That's how it got wet. So there's three ways. That is called Shabda. So three different ways you can find out. And usually, as humans, we tend to prefer Shabda, believe it or not. Even when we talk about outside of the ISKCON situation, we tend to prefer Shabda. In fact, a lot of things we learn in this universe, not just us, but not just devotees, but even non-devotees, whatever we learn through Shabda. We learn in school, and a lot of things, okay, the scientists may be doing their research, but we don't really do so much research. We just accept what we're told in school. We accept that somebody else has done the research. So for them, it may be whatever method they use, but for us, it's Shabda. Okay, we heard it from them. We go to university and learn. We learn a lot of things from experience, but we learn a lot of things from people telling us things. Okay, so a lot of things we learn is Shabda. And Shabda is good. The only problem with Shabda is that you may be hearing it from the wrong person, which means you have the wrong details. That's what can go wrong, isn't it? Isn't it, Parama Prabhu? This is part of the Veda course that Parama Prabhu teaches. Okay, you can hear from the wrong person and you'll get the wrong information. So you should be careful who you're asking. Now, Shabda has a lot of power, okay? The words you hear from people, there's a lot of power and potency in Shabda. Because interestingly, if you hear something long enough, you'll start believing it, whether it's true or not. If you hear it over and over and over and over again, eventually the mind will convince yourself that, oh yeah, this is true, this makes sense, okay? Even if it's not true. That's why we have affirmations. Okay, people do affirmations. It's a way to trick your mind. I can go in front of the mirror and say, I'm very handsome. I'm very beautiful. I'm very intelligent. And we know it's obviously wrong, but if I say it long enough in front of the mirror, I will start believing it. Okay, and it works. There is a story that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said about Bhagavan Pandit. You know this story? Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj told this story to his disciples. There was a minister in the court of a king, of course, and his name was Bhagavan Pandit. And he was very, very intelligent. And the king used to love him. He used to spend a lot of time with him. He used to always give him gifts and, you know, learn from him. But all the other ministers became envious. This Bhagavan Pandit guy, he's you know, he's very popular and he's getting all the attention and we're just being ignored. We don't even get the gifts or the money anymore. So they devise a plan. So what they do, the next day when Bhagavan Pandit came to the door, he said, oh, the king said he doesn't want to meet you anymore. So they're like, okay, well, why did the king say that? I don't know, but the king said he doesn't want to meet you anymore, so go away, we can't let you in. So they send Bhagavan Pandit away. So this, and then he doesn't come for a few days, and the king is a little bit worried, where is my friend? So he asks his ministers, where is this Bhagavan Pandit? He goes, oh, he died a while ago, he's dead, he's expired, he doesn't exist anymore. So he goes, really? He goes, why didn't anyone tell me? He goes, yeah, we thought we didn't want to bother you so much, so... or make you upset. But Bhagwan Pandit has died. So that's what they keep telling him. Bhagwan Pandit has died for for a long time. So the king is now convinced that Bhagwan Pandit is dead. So one day the king is out on his stroll and Bhagwan Pandit figures out this is the right time to approach the king. Okay? And tell him that I'm not dead. So Bhagwan Pandit is there. He's sitting on top of a tree. And as soon as the king comes, he jumps out right in front of the king. And then the ministers tell Bhagavan Pandit, they tell the king, oh look, here is the ghost of Bhagavan Pandit. He died a while ago. Look, there's a ghost. Don't say anything, my king, my lord, don't say anything. If you say anything, you'll get entrapped by his things. So don't, just ignore it and just keep walking. So the king is like, yeah, Bhagavan Pandit's dead. This is a ghost. Let's just keep walking. So he ignores him and just carries on walking, even though Bhagavan Pandit is right in front of him, screaming and shouting. Okay? Why did this happen? Because the king accepted. He heard it too many times. And he accepted. He was thinking like, well, so many people are telling me he's dead. Okay, so many people are telling me he's dead. So I'll accept their opinion. So sometimes we do that. The majority always wins. The majority may be a lie, but the majority always wins. If people keep telling you the wrong thing over and over again, and you keep hearing it, you will end up believing it, okay, whether it's true or not. So you have to be really careful what you hear. And before you accept something, you have to question yourself. And what I would like to do is ask you to go home, not right now, but when you go home, I want you to look at your beliefs a little bit and question them. And think about it and see, do I know what I know just because I've heard it too many times? Or because it makes sense? Or because it's supported by Shastra? Okay, does it actually make sense? Did Prabhupada say, is this logical? Or is this something that I've just heard time and again? And I especially say this in when I'm speaking to new people, because a lot of people out there, they just believe whatever they're told in the news and the media and through people. And there is generally a trend in the world out there that just goes around. And you end up believing things based on what everybody else believes, not because it makes sense. But sometimes we do that in Krishna consciousness too. We start accepting things because it's popular opinion. And even within Krishna consciousness, we should learn to discriminate what we hear. Now in this chapter you see that Narada is teaching by example that it is okay to ask questions to Brahma. He's questioning him a lot. And even if you read the Bhagavatam, throughout the whole Bhagavatam, there is a theme where Parikshit Maharaj is questioning Sukadeva Goswami. And some of these questions are quite provocative. Even the questions that Arjuna asks Krishna, He's almost stating it like, nah, I don't believe you, Krishna. It's like, really? Like, is that true? Like, it's almost like that. He's not just saying, Krishna, I'll just accept whatever you said without any without saying anything. He's actually, some of the questions are quite challenging, what Arjuna asks, because it's not matching his blueprint of ideas that he has. So he's saying, no, are you sure? And then Krishna explains it to him logically, and then he accepts it. And even Parikshit Maharaj, if you read the Bhagavatam, he's asking quite challenging questions, because he wants to understand. So I'm just saying that in a devotee community, sometimes we send our intelligence out to graze in the fields, and we sort of kind of pack our intelligence in a box and put it away in our Brahmacharya Ashram locker or whichever locker, and we don't really ask questions, and we think that whatever's being said is okay, let me just accept it. But there's nothing wrong with that. But the point is, as long as you questioned it enough, And as long as it's substantiated by Shastra, it is okay to ask that question to a senior devotee, that can you give me a reference? It is okay to ask that question even to your guru or to a sannyasi, Maharaj, can you give me a reference? I've heard many, many times, even in even in Vaishnava circles, when somebody quotes, oh yeah, such and such Maharaj said this, okay, and they quote them. And sometimes I'm in the audience thinking, oh, it doesn't sound okay, and I would like to see a reference. So sometimes we accept things, go around, and it's good to check if Prabhupada, did Prabhupada say that? Is there a reference from the Shastra? Okay, we should look at these things, because it is very important to use discrimination. Discrimination is a bad word sometimes in the world, but it's not really a bad word if it's not used for malicious purposes. Okay, discrimination is a very good word. In fact, we're discriminating all the time, every day, on what to do, what not to do. And it is important to discriminate if you want to be good, strong devotees, because otherwise you'll accept anything anybody says. Discrimination's got a bad name in the past. Yesterday, one lady who comes to our mind, body, soul events, she came up to me and she said, like, she asked me, like, do you feel comfortable if someone calls you brown? Like, if I say, what do you call yourself? Do you say you're a brown guy or a black guy? What do you? I'm like, no, I don't have an issue if someone calls me a brown guy. It's okay. She goes, well, I call someone that at work, and they kind of kicked up this whole fuss about I'm being racist. And yes, there was a time in the, you know, and maybe still there is a lot, when people, you know, you mention the color and it goes, oh, that's racist. And it used to be the case when people used to discriminate quite a lot based on racism, and that is wrong. That is wrong. But at the same time, what I feel is we've kind of gone to the other extreme, and you know, if anybody says anything about color, even in a nice way, I don't have a problem if people call me brown. But it's just, we've just taken it in a nice way. So we don't like discrimination, the word, so much. But the point is that discrimination is okay if it's used in a good way to protect yourself from bad things, and protect yourself from knowledge that may not be right. It is okay to discriminate and ask questions. We have to watch out for things that are philosophically inaccurate. Okay? Even Rupa Goswami talks about discrimination. Did you know that? In the Nectar of Instruction, if you read verse number 5, okay, this is how it goes. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Lord Krishna. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who is advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. He's not saying we should see all devotees as equal and serve and associate with everybody. Okay, Rupa Goswami doesn't say that in the Nectar of Instruction. There is a reason he's making a discrimination. He doesn't say bow down to anybody who chants the holy name of Krishna. Okay, he says bow down to somebody who is initiated and who's engaged in worshipping the deity. He doesn't say serve anybody and everybody and associate with anybody and everybody who's a devotee. He says serve and associate with devotees, a pure devotee who is advanced and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. And I think the idea is that we should always seek out higher association. And yes, we should respect all devotees. We should appreciate all devotees. We should be grateful that devotees exist, because it is very rare to find devotees, and we don't think that at the manor, but you know, we do this online program on Tuesday evenings where people join in from all over the country. Myself and Kishori, we do this. We started in the lockdown because we used to do Mind, Body, Soul here on Wednesdays, and we couldn't carry on in the lockdown, so we started it online on Tuesdays, and we're still carrying it on. And we get devotees from Portsmouth, Bournemouth, Birmingham, Exeter, you know, a couple of devotees from Finland. One guy joined in from Singapore at 2 a.m. at night. You know, people join in from all over the place. And they tell me how rare it is to find devotees anywhere. There's nobody in my town. And they somehow keep going. This is like the best association they can get online. So we don't think that, but devotees are very, very rare. And we should appreciate and respect and acknowledge all devotees. And we shouldn't discriminate against devotees, but we should discriminate against what we hear. Shabda is what we're talking about. And everything that we hear, we should, you know, if it's substantiated by Shastra, it is okay. But if it's not, then you have the prerogative to use your intelligence to decide what to do with that information. We should be able to take Shastra and develop the potency to use that Shastra to become... You should be able to utilize that Shastra to think independently and use your intelligence to decipher what's right and what's wrong. And it's very important. But sometimes people don't like discriminating like that, okay? Sometimes people say, why don't we just accept what everybody says, okay? We should just see everybody as equal, okay? We should just discuss Krishna's pastimes, obviously, they're the topmost. Okay, we shouldn't bother ourselves with all this discrimination. Obviously, it's coming from devotees, so it should be true. First of all, there are three things, okay, three reasons why we think we shouldn't discriminate. Okay, first thing, we think discrimination is a bad thing. Okay, that's the first thing, we think discrimination is bad. If you're discriminating against people, you know, if you, for malicious reasons, it is a bad thing. But if you're discriminating with the knowledge that you're receiving from people in order to understand what's right, that is actually intelligence. We need that. Sometimes we think discriminating is fault-finding. Okay? And people are afraid of fault-finding, of committing offenses. Well, I don't want to question that. I don't want to say anything because it seems like I don't want to be a fault-finder. We don't have to be fault-finders, but we should be cautious to the information that we're receiving because, you know, if you hear it long enough, you'll end up believing it, okay, and then you'll get into trouble. And I have seen many, many new devotees come to Krishna consciousness, and I know people who heard things from people that weren't necessarily true, and they've disappeared, they're blown out, okay. I know a couple of devotees who even joined the Ritvik movement because they heard certain things. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Gaurinitai ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki. Okay? So number one, we think discrimination is a bad thing. Number two, we think it is fault-finding or offensive. And number three is we think it's too much work. Okay? Sometimes we become too lazy to discriminate. We don't want to discriminate. We don't want to use our intelligence because it's just easy to just go along with what everybody says. It's very easy to go with that. Sometimes we think we don't need to, you know, use our intelligence. It's too much work. We think we should just love everybody. Okay, it's okay. I'm not against love. I like love. Sometimes we think we should love everybody. We should just be soft-hearted. We should just be non-discriminatory. We should be equal to everybody. And that is all okay. But one thing I want to point out is soft doesn't mean mushy. Okay, there's a difference between being soft-hearted and being mushy in the middle. Okay, you know peas, you get peas. We want to be well-cooked peas, but we don't want to be mushy peas. Okay, because if you're too mushy, then, you know, you'll be in trouble. And I came across a poem that somebody wrote. Okay, it's called Mushy in the Middle. Okay, do you want to hear it? It's a good poem. Okay. So it's about a devotee who's mushy in the middle. Okay, this is how it goes. Mushy in the middle, wanted a life sublime, a life of peace, harmony, free from crime. Someone told Mushy about spiritual life, the first-class way to a life without strife. Mushy joined ISKCON. He'd made a find. He thought he'd found many of like mind. Yes, he was right, and yet he was wrong. Mushy didn't know, he kept going strong. For many years, Mushy tried to learn the science, but within Mushy's heart was a subtle defiance. Poor Mushy wanted to love, never to hate, but he hated one thing, and that is to discriminate. Said Mushy, the problem with discrimination, it's such a burden, such a taxation. I really don't like a life that's so taxing. I think spiritual life is more for relaxing. I'm happy enough if people think I am mellow. Why should I struggle like the other fellow? You people are simply not sensitive enough, or you'd have realized that I'm the right stuff. So the years rolled on, Mushy made it to the top, and despite many warnings, Mushy didn't stop. And when death came, there was a great hue and cry. Even poor Mushy didn't know that he'd lived a lie. Now the question comes, how could one so great have such a misfortune descend on his plate? Friend, the answer to this is really no riddle. It was simply that he was mushy in the middle. The thing is, if you become too mushy, and if you don't discriminate, we end up in problems. And I think our society as a whole has had problems in the past. And I'm not going to go through the history of ISKCON in the last 50 years. But if you look back a little bit, we've had problems in the past because we failed to discriminate. Okay? There's certain things, certain borderlines, even Prabhupada told us about. Okay? Certain things. Okay? Don't associate with certain types of people. Okay? Don't try and learn things from outside ISKCON. Okay? You don't need to go to other places. Don't hear from anybody and everybody. Even though they may be Gaudiya Vaishnavas, let's stick to our movement. Even within our movement, just make sure that what you're hearing is qualified from Shastras, from what Prabhupada is saying. I myself have heard a lot of things over time in going around in ISKCON which are not quite okay. And people get confused. It confuses people. And I usually teach new people and they all come to me asking questions and I go like, where do you hear that from? That's not true. And then I have to put in the hard work. So please save me the hard work. Let's just question things a little bit. Let's not be mushy in the middle. Okay? Let's be soft and cooked peas, but not mushy peas. Okay? Now somebody may say that, well, of course, he's a senior devotee. He's saying something. It must be true. How do we know who's a senior devotee? Sometimes we say, doesn't it take one to know one? Okay, how do we know one is an advanced devotee? Doesn't it take one to know one? The answer is no. Because Krishna explains all the qualities in the Bhagavad Gita. Did you know there are over 100 verses in the Bhagavad Gita out of 700 where Krishna is just explaining the qualities of a pure devotee? Okay, you can read those qualities, you can see if those qualities are present, and then you can know if one is a pure devotee or not. It's simple. You don't need to be one to know one. We know. Sometimes we think, oh, somebody distributes 150 books every day. He must be a pure devotee. Okay, sometimes we confuse skills with devotion. Okay, he's distributing 150 books a day, but has he developed the qualities that Krishna is saying that a pure devotee has in the Bhagavad Gita? And we don't want to put him down. We don't want to discriminate against people, like I said. We want to respect him. We should appreciate people who are distributing a lot of books and who are doing other things, all other services. But the point is that we should learn to discriminate what we hear, okay, and know where it comes from. So don't elevate devotees to a platform based on their skill, because then you'll hear something that's not quite okay from them, and then it'll just confuse you. Okay, you're the one who's going to end up in trouble if you do that. So we should take Prabhupada's word. We should learn to discriminate. Prabhupada said, never give up your intelligence. Surrender everything, but not your intelligence. So keep your intelligence with you at all times. Just be cautious what you hear. And as long as it's substantiated by Prabhupada's words and what Shastra tells us, it is okay. But if it's not, it is okay to question. Doesn't matter who it comes from. And I think throughout the whole Bhagavatam, Shabda is what we hear. But it's all Shabda from the right places, from the right people. So we should know where a person's at and whether we should hear from him or not. And if we are hearing, we should make sure that it's qualified by Shastra. Okay? That's the thing we need to know. Cautionary advice based on this talk. You don't have to be arrogant. You don't have to be rude, okay, on this basis. You don't have to be, mean. We should be respectful. We should appreciate. We should understand that everybody is on a spiritual journey. Devotees are rare. But that doesn't absolve you of the responsibility to use your intelligence to discriminate what you're hearing. And that doesn't absolve you of the responsibility of placing boundaries in your own spiritual life to understand who you're associating with. Because if you associate with anybody and everybody, you'll hear anything and everything, and then you'll be a confused mess of different philosophies, and that's gonna stop you from making spiritual progress. So ultimately, you know, you're gonna be mushy in the middle. Okay, we don't end up like mushy, do we? Okay, great. So that is what I wanted to say. There wasn't much of a purport, and I kind of took it that you've been listening to planets all month, and it's not really my forte. Planets, that's rather Mohan Prabhu's. So I thought I'd speak on this topic. Hopefully that was okay. If I have committed any offense, just so you know, all my examples weren't directed at anybody that I'm thinking of. It was just generic examples. But if someone felt anything was not right, we can discuss, we can open up to some questions, and I do seek your forgiveness if I said something that was inappropriate. But we have 5 minutes if there are any questions. So, oh my God, have I created a revolution, or am I going to be thrown out? Yes, Kamal Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much for the class and raising such an important point on discrimination. Yeah. Would you be able to give a specific example of how what we may be mushy and how to, yeah, so just like an example so I can understand a little bit better what it means to be mushy?
Okay, what it means to be mushy is when people just accept everything they hear from anybody. Okay, anything you hear from anybody in ISKCON, we all place it on the same sort of, what do you call it? We give it the same number of points. It doesn't matter who we hear it from. And we shouldn't do that. We should look at the person and go, okay, here is a pure devotee. He's saying this, and this is substantiated by Shastra, so it's a number 10. Okay, here is a new bhakta. He's still working on it. And we appreciate him, we respect him, but whatever he's saying is, you know, I'm going to place it at a number 2. Okay? But by default, anything anybody says, we place it at 10. That's what I've seen in my life as well. In the past, I used to do that. Anybody says anything in ISKCON, we say, wow, that's amazing. And we just take that. And even among senior devotees, we should be careful. We should check if it is substantiated by Shastra. So what happens if you don't do that? You'll get confusing messages, and you'll be a bowl of confused messages, and then you wouldn't know what to do. Sometimes we're all mushy also in the sense that we associate with people outside of ISKCON, and recently this trend has become much and much very, very big. Everybody associating, thinking that, yeah, it's all okay, you know, anybody who is a devotee is okay, even if they're not from ISKCON. And it's created problems in the past, and it is still creating bigger and bigger problems. And I know some people won't like me for saying this. Maybe I'll be banned from classes. But Prabhupada said it. Don't associate with people outside of ISKCON. Prabhupada said that. There are quotes on that. You can look it up. But it's creating problems. So mushy, don't be too mushy. Mushy means just use your intelligence to discriminate what's what and what's not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhupada. I think, yes, Prabhuji had a question, yeah. There's a mic behind you.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, with the intelligence, what you said, that you have to follow your intelligence.
Yeah.
So intelligence has got one limit.
Yeah.
And to overcome that limit, you have to surrender to the, like, you know, to the highest knowledge.
Yeah.
So in terms of, like, you know, when we go for the surrender to the highest knowledge, we have to put our bharosa. So bharosa,
our trust.
Yeah. We have to put our trust to someone who is qualified.
Yeah.
So rather, like, you know, that's what my belief, but you can correct me. Mm-hmm. So what I think, rather wasting the time, because life is too short, rather wasting the time, the things are already there. So why we have to put question, and questions when we have already got the answer is there? So don't you think it is just a simple process? Put your intelligence away, follow the shastras. interpret your intelligence according to the Shastra and then surrender to the person. So rather questioning lot to ourselves, to other people, and rather be judgmental, the things are already there and we need to follow there. Can you just give some sort of the light on this one, please?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a very good point. But you said the exact same thing that I said. I'm saying the exact same thing. That I'm not saying you shouldn't hear from people. I'm not saying you shouldn't surrender. Okay, let me finish. Just 1 second. Let me answer your question. So you're saying Shastra, we need to surrender to Shastra. I'm not against that. We should surrender to Shastra. We should verify everything based on Shastra. If there is a senior devotee, somebody you trust, who is at a good standing, who is an advanced devotee, who displays the qualities that are given in the Bhagavad Gita of a pure devotee, you can trust him. And if he's saying things based on Shastra, you can trust him. There's nothing wrong with that. That's yeah. 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 Yeah, but the point is, Prabhupada's point was that if you go to different people, especially outside of ISKCON, not everybody follows or understands the same things. Sometimes Prabhupada had a certain mood of explaining things. Prabhupada explained things in a certain way. And even if you go outside of ISKCON to different Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the philosophy does change. And what's going to happen is it's going to end up leaving you confused. Okay, if you hear from too many people, okay, you want to surrender your intelligence? Do it to somebody who is a pure devotee, who you trust, who displays the qualities, and you can, qualities of a pure devotee, who you fully trust, who is within ISKCON, and then you can give up your intelligence. But then the thing is, it's also good to keep your intelligence because you'll still hear from other people around you. So you still need to decipher. But if you give your intelligence to too many people, if you give up your intelligence and listen to so many people, then you will become a mishmash. And then it'll just leave you confused. I don't have an issue. But second thing is also called philosophical integrity, and integrity to the movement, and integrity to the acharyas. And because we came to Krishna consciousness because of Prabhupada, ISKCON was created by Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is a founder acharya of the Hare Krishna movement. If Prabhupada says don't associate with people outside of ISKCON, we don't do it. That's philosophical and integrity to the movement. I think somebody else here had raised a question.
I have a question. Thank you for the class. It was very good. In the beginning, I was actually falling asleep. But after in the end, it was really just exactly what I needed to hear.
Yeah, the mushy in the middle poem?
Because basically, I came here, I came here quite quick and with a lot of passion or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And on the beginning, I did feel a lot that people were discriminating me or something like this.
Yeah.
So I kind of did listen to my ego a lot more instead of actually listening to who I really am.
Yeah.
Because I felt like if I would act the way I was, I would myself, which I like to love people and do things for people, I think I was gonna be used.
Yeah.
So, what I want to ask is, obviously you said that it's good to listen to advice, but to discriminate each person. How can I actually apply that? Because a lot of people, I've listened to them, and I've kind of felt that they were actually telling me something, but wasn't really advice. It was just something that would put me down or not allow me to believe in myself. And sometimes it's also hard to believe in yourself because it might just be your ego talking. So what could I do there to really...
Well, yeah, thank you. That's a very good question. And I think first of all, what I would say is don't take advice from everybody. Maybe find one or two people you trust. And then you take advice and guidance on how to follow Krishna consciousness from them. Like Paramakaruna, for example. I fully trust him. He's a very good teacher and he'll give you the right advice. But you may not want to take advice from everybody and anybody because, it's not their fault either, because they are also progressing slowly on their path to Krishna consciousness. So they may not have done things intentionally. It may be unintentional because everybody is learning. You see, everybody, even I'm learning, and I may have made many mistakes here. That's okay. I have to learn from devotees who are senior to me like that. So maybe my advice would be, don't take advice from everybody. Maybe select a few people you trust and then take advice from Krishna consciousness from them. And other conversations can be friendly conversations and discussions and things like that. But if something comes across that you feel is not right, or somebody's putting you down, or somebody's doing something wrong, then take it to those one or two people you trust and discuss it with them, and then make a decision based on that. That's what. Thank you. Who should we go? Should we take one of the ladies? We have. Just wait for the mic. When should we finish, Paramakarana Prabhu? 8:30? So soon. Okay, so maybe one question and then? Is that good? Maybe Achyuta Prabhu and then we finish.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for your class. I'm just wondering, you explained very nicely a Vedic way of knowledge through the pramanas, through the three pramanas, but in the beginning you were speaking about planetary system.
Yeah.
From lower, middle and higher.
Yeah.
So that there is some symbolic. So I'm curious how you are connecting this topic of planetary system through the level, three level, with the level of Vedic knowledge, which is also explained through these pramanas, three pramanas. And yes, so how do you linking these topics? What's the symbolic? What is the link? So how do you decide to choose this topic between verses in the Shastra and pramanas? So how they are connected?
So, sorry, I'm not sure if I understand your question correctly. Let me just go through it. So you're saying there's different planetary systems.
A verse was about the planetary
system. Yeah, the verse is about planetary systems.
And then you connect this
to
verse,
pramana.
To pramana.
And what is the connection?
So how did you find that connection?
Well, the connection is that nobody's ever seen the planetary systems being formed, for example. Okay? Like, I wasn't there when the Earth was created, obviously, because I wasn't there. So when the universe was created, but it's there. It's a fundamental question. So how do you find the answer to that? You can't use pratyaksha because you weren't there. You couldn't have seen it with your own eyes. You can sort of use anuman, and that is the scientific process that, based on certain evidences they have now, it's a science of deduction that takes them to understanding that this is how planetary systems were created. But shabda is to hear it from somebody who was there at the time. And in this verse, Narada is asking Brahma about creation because he created it and he was there. And hence he's asking the right person about how the creation took place and where the planets are and stuff like that. So in this case, shabda. So that's how we spoke about shabda. Was that what you were asking?
Yeah, I was just curious. It's very symbolic.
Yeah.
You know, so I was just curious, how did you connecting that to... But thank you so much for clarification.
Thank you. Maybe just David Prabhu and Achyuta, and then we call it a day. David Prabhu, go easy on me, man.
Yeah,
David Prabhu's got very intelligent questions.
I just have a question
about,
in terms of, we say the Prema Vani prayers,
yeah.
We mentioned Paramahansa Pariravacharya.
Yeah.
And these are the stages of sannyas. So I'm wondering, in terms of Pariravacharya is a lower stage of sannyas. And I'm wondering if there's a correlation between this and Uttama and Madhyamadhikari in terms of discrimination.
Yeah.
That's why it's mentioned rather than just Paramahansa.
That's a good question. David Prabhu is asking, Paramahamsa Pariravacharya, they are the levels of sannyas, isn't it? Third stage and fourth stage of sannyas. And is there a correlation between that and Uttama Madhyama Kanishta Adhikari? There may be, there may not be. The thing is, just because someone is on the highest level of sannyas, may not be that they are an Uttama Adhikari, because sannyas is, it's a designation, it's one of the varnas. And just because you're growing older doesn't mean you're getting more advanced, okay? It may well be the case. It may well be the case that when someone is a Parivrajaka Acharya, when one is traveling everywhere and preaching, it may well be the case that they are an Uttama Adhikari, but it may not be also. I think Uttama Madhyama and Kanishta Adhikaris are defined based on Rupa Goswami's definition of their faith, how strong their faith is. You know that definition that Uttama means someone whose faith is a bit not so strong. Madhyama means their faith is strong, but they can't debate their point based on Shastra, but they won't waver from their determination. And Uttama Adhikari means their faith is strong, but at the same time, they're philosophically very adept at debating, and they can defeat the other person in argument. I think that is the basis of defining, according to Shastra, who is Kanishta, Uttama, and Madhyama. And if a Paramhamsa or a Parivrajakacharya, we're talking about the level of sannyasya, if at that Parivrajakacharya level one is able to do those things, then yeah, you might as well say he's an Uttama Adhikari, like that. But that is the basis. I don't think there's a definition for Parivrajakacharya and the level of faith or something. I haven't heard it, at least. Thank you, Prabhu. And Achyuta, and then we finish. Hare Krishna.
Can you? Yeah. Because I know you personally, and I just want to clarify something so that you're not misunderstood. So it's more of like a quick comment.
Yeah.
I think it's quite important to define what association means.
Yeah.
So you say, Prabhupada said not to associate with people outside of ISKCON.
Yeah.
And I think association here means kind of sitting down and taking life advice on your on your spiritual progression, or revealing your heart to them, and taking like really deep advice about your life. Whereas it doesn't mean like, you know, a cult where we don't talk to anyone else.
Yeah.
Or don't learn from other people's lived experiences and how they've lived their life and things that they've learned or come across like that.
Yeah.
But discrimination is very important. If I met someone and said, for a hobby they keep assault rifles, that's a red flag. Like,
yeah,
I will stay away.
Yeah,
Like that, just wanted to...
No, that's right. So association means taking guidance, discussing philosophy, teachings, learning from them. That's what we're talking about. If you have friends who may be devotees but not in ISKCON, that's okay. You don't have to hate them. You can still hang out with them. I know even one devotee who is a Prabhupada disciple who's married to a Jehovah's Witness for the last 30 years, and they have a happy life. So it's okay. It's okay like that. But yeah, you're right. Thank you for bringing that up. It means taking guidance and discussing teachings and things like that, philosophical. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.